Want to get more from Killer Psyche? Subscribe to Wondery Plus for early access to new episodes, ad-free listening, and exclusive content you cannot find anywhere else. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. In the 1987 movie The Princess Bride, adapted from William Goldman's novel by the same name, two lovers named Buttercup and Wesley overcome dangerous obstacles, impossible situations, and even death itself to be together. Along the way, they meet other characters, some who join in the journey to help the two lovers reunite. A Spanish swordsman who initially starts out as an enemy of the couple soon becomes one of their strongest allies. His name is Inigo Montoya, and he is on a quest to find his father's killer, a six-fingered man who gave him two permanent scars on his face. When he finally finds and confronts the man, Count Rugen, instead of fighting him, the Count turns and runs away. But Inigo will not be denied his revenge and gives chase. Even after the Count offered him everything he could, Rugen could not give Inigo his father back. And because of that, the Count had to die. In today's episode, Belinda Van Creveld's drive for revenge ends with the brutal murder of her father, Jack. The scars that Jack gave Belinda are not visible. She also believes that he is responsible for her brother becoming a serial killer. And while Belinda's quest might not seem as noble as Inigo's, I don't think that there would have been anything that Jack could have given her that would have saved him from his fate. We get support from Audible. There's more to imagine when you listen. And the Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. With Michael Connelly's audio drama, The Safe Man, you will be transported to a riveting detective story, nail-biting heist thriller, and supernatural mystery, all of that in one story. It's about a man named Brian who is hired to open a rare antique safe. And of course, it unleashes something sinister. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. That's audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. Killer Psyche is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. From Wondery and Treefort Media, I'm Candace DeLong, and this is the third season of Killer Psyche. I was a psychiatric nurse and then an FBI criminal profiler. In the 5 decades I've spent studying people's minds, I've interviewed countless murderers, including many serial killers. Why did they do it? To get a satisfying answer, we have to dive deep into their psyche. to figure out what made them do what they did. This episode is Belinda Van Crevel. For 4 weeks in the summer of 2000, 20-year-old Belinda Van Crevel sat in a courtroom in Wollongong, Australia, and watched as her brother Mark stood trial for the brutal murders of two men that occurred 2 years earlier. Valera had turned himself into police and confessed to the crimes, where the victims were killed by repeated blows to the head. Valera decapitated the first man, mutilated his genitals, and used the victim's severed hand to paint the word Satan and draw a pentagram and upside-down cross on the wall. The second man, his face was mutilated with tie clips, including his eyes. His motive was that he was just angry and looking for someone to kill that day. Valera told detectives his anger stemmed from being mentally and physically abused by his father, Jack Van Crevel, as a child. In fact, he hated him so much that he changed his surname to Valera. On the witness stand, Valera claimed that both victims, who were homosexual, had made sexual advances towards him. He maintained that this provoked memories of his father sexually abusing him, and he temporarily lost sanity. Valera said the first victim played a pornographic video to entice him. What Valera did not know was that investigators had checked the victim's video player and found the tape in the deck was about Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, not pornography. Although Valera's father, Jack Van Crevel, admitted to physically, verbally, and emotionally abusing his son, Jack vehemently denied the sexual abuse, and the judge in the case rejected Valera's claims. A court-appointed psychologist also doubted the sexual abuse, as well as the claim that the victims propositioned Valera sexually. After all, Valera did not even know that the first victim was gay until after he was arrested. And all of the claims of the victims making sexual advances occurred 2 years after his arrest and 1 month before his trial. But for Belinda, her brother's allegations of sexual abuse made sense. And she felt that it was the only explanation for why Mark, who Belinda believed was a good person, would have done such horrible deeds. This was the first time that Belinda had ever heard about this sexual abuse, but it jogged her memories of their father entering her brother's room at night and not coming out until the morning. Belinda seethed as she watched her brother crumble and cry during Jack's testimony. For years, she had harbored anger and resentment towards her father, who had beaten both of his children, and this was further fuel for her hatred. She decided that her father was to blame for her brother becoming a killer. And now, it was time for him to pay. In Belinda's mind, her father had to die. After her brother was convicted and sent away for life, Belinda blamed his incarceration on their father. Then she began soliciting people to kill him. During her brother's trial, Belinda began a relationship with his best friend, 21-year-old Keith Schreiber. She told him of the verbal, physical, and sexual abuse that she and Valera had suffered at the hands of their father, Jack, and how Jack was now molesting her 4-year-old daughter, Tia. Keith, determined to protect Belinda and her daughter, vowed to avenge his best friend for the abuse that they had suffered. At midnight, August 18, 2002 weeks after Mark was convicted, Belinda lay awake in her bed with Tia lying next to her. They heard noises coming from her father's bedroom. Weird noises, the young mother would later say, like someone getting killed. just minutes earlier, an intruder had entered 48-year-old Jack Van Krevel's bedroom and ambushed him with a small axe. Jack woke up and fought back. Frustrated, the axe wielder turned on the lights to see his victim better. Jack recognized his attacker. It was 21-year-old Keith Schreiber, his son's best friend since the first days of grade school. "Keith," Jack said in shock, as Schreiber continued swinging the axe. When Jack did not die right away, Schreiber ran to the kitchen to find a knife. He also collected a poker stick from the living room fireplace. He returned to Jack's bedroom and continued hacking at the older man. From the bedroom across the hallway, Belinda and her daughter listened as Jack screamed and begged for mercy. Tia cried, "What's happening to Poppy?" Belinda shushed her, pulled the blankets over their heads, and covered her daughter's ears. Finally, after 25 excruciating minutes, the weird noises stopped. Moments later, Belinda's bedroom door opened. Belinda and Tia remained frozen under the covers. Schreiber closed the door, went to the kitchen, and drank a glass of water. Then he left through the same window he had entered, leaving a trail of blood as he moved through the house. After another 30 minutes of silence, Belinda opened her bedroom door and saw blood on the hallway walls. She did not check on her father, nor did she pick up the phone from her bedside table and call for help. Instead, she bundled Tia up and the two got into the car. Belinda drove to the police station, not the closest one, but the Warwilla police station about 15 minutes from the Van Krevel house. At 3 a.m., Belinda and her daughter entered and reported an intruder had attacked her father. The police accompanied Belinda back to the house. She waited outside while officers investigated. They discovered Jack's brutalized body, naked, on his knees, head resting on a piece of furniture. He had been struck 25 times and stabbed a further 16. He did not die quickly. The following day, Keith Schreiber voluntarily appeared at the police station for questioning. Detectives interviewed witnesses that told them Belinda hated her father and wanted him dead, and that she had approached Schreiber to do it. One of those witnesses was Belinda's own estranged mother, Elizabeth Carroll, who had recently re-entered the Van Krevels' lives. 3 days before the murder, Belinda told her mother that she offered Schreiber $2,000 and a car to kill her father. The plan was to chop him up in pieces and throw him into the Kiama Blowhole, a huge geyser off the coast and just south of Wollongong. Initially, Schreiber denied involvement. When he realized police were focusing on him and Belinda, though, he quickly confessed and took all responsibility for the crime. He was also unrepentant. Police asked him if he thought Belinda, with whom he was in a romantic relationship, would be happy with what he had done. He replied simply, "I hope so." Police asked him about Belinda approaching people to kill her father. Schreiber said he did not know if Belinda was serious or not, but he knew that she wanted him done. She claimed that Jack had molested her and her brother when they were children. And just days earlier, Belinda began accusing Jack of preying upon his granddaughter Tia as well. Schreiber told police, quote, "Well, he won't be doing anything more to Tia." Detectives then took Schreiber to the scene where he walked them through the attack. He showed them how he first collected a small axe from a ledge above the Van Krevels' garage. Then he went to the side of the house and climbed through an unlocked window into Tia's empty bedroom. Tia was conveniently in the next room, in bed with her mother. Schreiber then snuck into Jack's bedroom. As he stood over Jack, axe in hand, he told him, "You effing pedophile bastard, you'll never molest another kid again." When police questioned Belinda about arranging the murder, she denied all involvement. She also denied that she was in a sexual relationship with Schreiber. She admitted that the day of the murder, she and Schreiber met up to visit her brother, Mark Valera, in prison. But they were turned away because they did not have an appointment. So they went to the shopping mall where Keith bought a pair of black cotton gloves. Afterwards, they sat in the parking lot in Belinda's car for 4 hours talking about nothing in particular. Hours later, Schreiber would hack Jack Van Crevel to death. Sound like just a coincidence to you? Even though Belinda denied being in a sexual relationship with Schreiber to police, Schreiber's sister and roommates described hearing the two having sex. They also said that Schreiber was devastated by Mark's incarceration. They noted that after Mark's arrest, Schreiber became obsessed with Belinda. In 2001, Schreiber was tried, convicted, and sentenced to 16 years in prison for Jack Van Crevel's murder. He was released and paroled in 2012 after serving 12 years. Shortly after her father's murder, Belinda sold his house. In January 2001, she learned that she was set to inherit $280,000 from Jack's will, and Mark Valera would receive $90,000. She claimed to not know that her father even had a will, but her uncle disputed that. However, when Belinda was taken into custody in June of 2001, the inheritance funds were frozen by the court. Finally, 2 years after Jack Van Crevel was hacked to death, Belinda confessed to being the mastermind behind the murder. Unfortunately, this was just the beginning of her troubles with the law. If you're captivated by true crime mysteries that remain unsolved for decades, then you won't want to miss Who Killed Jennifer Judd, a new investigative podcast from ID. In May 1992, 20-year-old Jennifer Judd was brutally murdered in her apartment just 9 days after marrying her high school sweetheart. Jennifer had been stabbed multiple times with knives that were just given to her as a wedding gift. Now, 32 years after Jennifer's tragic death, investigator Sarah Kalin is determined to finally solve this cold case. She'll speak with Jennifer's friends and family, piecing together the details of her life and the moments leading up to her murder. Who Killed Jennifer Judd is a captivating true crime podcast that digs deep into this perplexing murder. Listen to Who Killed Jennifer Judd wherever you get your podcast.
There's nothing worse than getting home from your trip only to find out you missed a can't-miss travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator makes it easy to explore over 300,000 travel experiences, everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche interesting stuff in between, so you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who have already been on the experience you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer service means you always have support around the clock. Download the Viator app now to use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Regret less, do more with Viator.
Belinda Jean Van Crevel was born in July of 1980 in Wollobong, a coastal city about 70 miles south of Sydney. Her parents were Elizabeth Carroll and Jack Van Crevel, a bricklayer. Elizabeth walked out on the family in 1982, abandoning 3-year-old Mark and 2-year-old Belinda. Jack raised the children as a single father, never remarrying. He earned a comfortable living constructing brick veneers on buildings during a construction boom in the 1980s. Both Mark and Belinda claimed that their father physically beat them. Belinda said that every day of her childhood, she believed their father was going to kill them. She would later tell the press that sometimes he beat her so badly she wet herself. On one occasion, Mark had to be taken to the hospital. Mark had learning disabilities, a speech impediment, and had trouble fitting in at school. When he entered grade school, Mark befriended Keith Schreiber, and the two of them quickly gained a reputation as bullies. Jack always disapproved of Schreiber. Both Mark and Keith dropped out of school at age 15. Mark worked as a dishwasher in restaurants and Keith in the fish markets. At 16, Belinda gave birth to her daughter, Tia. She and Tia continued to live in Jack's house. Mark moved out when he was 18 and hated his father so much, he changed his last name to Valera. Later on, Jack's brother and friends contested the physical abuse claims, saying they never saw bruises on the children. They recalled how Jack had hired tutors to help Mark in school and even voluntarily took a parenting class. They also said Jack paid for Mark to participate in motocross sports, buying him expensive bikes and other gear. They said when Mark and Belinda were teenagers, they turned openly hostile towards their father, something they believed was without cause. Yet, when Jack took the stand at his son's murder trial in 2000, he admitted that he physically abused his children. So much for witness accounts. I would just like to remind you that child abuse of all kinds rarely takes place in front of other people. Jack even admitted that one time he held a gun to the head of his 7-year-old son. He adamantly denied ever sexually molesting them, though. While Jack testified, Mark shrunk down in his chair and cried, while Belinda sat seething in hers. After the judge handed Mark 2 life sentences without parole, Belinda and her mother, who had re-entered her children's lives after Mark's arrest, told the press that Jack Van Crevel was responsible for his son's crimes. Belinda believed Jack should be the one going to prison. You might be wondering why we are focusing on Belinda in this episode when it was actually her brother Mark that was a killer and a brutal, maniacal, very disturbed, psychopathic killer at that. Belinda never physically killed anyone. All true. Although I find Mark to be a fascinating killer, his motivation for killing those two men was vastly different than Belinda's motivation for manipulating Keith to kill her father, Jack, the man who raised her. Mark was very, very disturbed psychologically from years upon years of emotional, physical, and sexual abuse by his father since he was a little boy. Although it is not proven that Jack sexually abused Mark, my years of experience working in sex crimes leads me to believe that this abuse happened. And to the friends and family of Jack that say they never saw it, well, of course they did not see it. Child sex abuse is rarely witnessed by outsiders. So, of course, there is no one around to support Mark's claim, except Belinda. Moreover, I believe Jack was trying to protect himself from public condemnation and retribution. I think he feared people might see a link between his inexcusable behavior as a father and the undeniable fact that his son became a serial killer of homosexual men. And that is why I think Jack lied on the witness stand, to protect himself. It is an indisputable fact that Jack Van Crevel made his son Mark into the gruesome, heartless killing machine that he became, and who is now locked away forever because of the way he was raised. I think Mark never had a chance of having a normal life. I also think that both of Mark's victims, the two middle-aged men that he murdered and mutilated, were stand-ins for his father, the man he probably really wanted to kill. But like the vast, vast, vast majority of child abuse victims, Mark could not bring himself to end the life of his father, his abuser. In all my years as a psychiatric nurse, as well as an FBI agent, I have interviewed dozens upon dozens of adult survivors of child sex abuse. Why? Because many of these victims end up in psychiatric care, rehab facilities, or in prison because they committed a crime of interpersonal violence. Not all, but many. I had many patients who were hospitalized because they were, as adults, either homicidal, suicidal, or a danger to themselves in some way, such as serious self-cutting, because of abuse they suffered as a child. But inside each and every one of them, both men and women, lived a terrified and helpless child who was unable to confront their abuser, usually for fear of losing the love they sought from them so desperately. Kind of like, if I just don't make them mad or disappoint them, then they'll love me. So in that regard, Mark is not at all unusual in the rarefied world of serial killers. What is unusual is what Jack's daughter, Belinda, did. Have her father killed by her lover, Keith, aka murder by proxy. But make no mistake, just because she did not strike the blows or wield the knife that ended Jack's life, she is no less responsible for this death than her lover, Keith Schreiber. If not for her suggestion and manipulation of Keith, Jack might be alive today. There is nothing in Belinda's story about her own victimization or her brother's that leads me to believe she was not telling me the truth about their father abusing both of them. And that brings us to this episode's highly unusual story, a child killing a parent. When a child kills a parent, it is known as parricide, and it is extremely rare, less than 300 cases a year. So what do we know about it? Is there psychology to it? Actually, yes, there is. In an article published in the December 23 issue of Crime Traveler by crime researcher and writer Fiona Guy, research has uncovered typologies and common characteristics of parricide offenders and explains why some children, adult or adolescent, may commit this crime. We covered two infamous cases of parricide in season one of Killer Psyche. Lizzie Borden, who killed both her parents in 1872, and she walked out of court, by the way, and the Menendez brothers, who together killed both their parents. The motivations in both of these cases were very different. Borden killed for personal financial gain and to be free of her father's oppression, while the Menendez brothers claimed they were afraid their parents were going to both disinherit them and kill them. They also claimed sexual abuse by their father, which now appears to be true. But the jury did not buy the Menendez brothers' story, and they have been in prison almost 30 years. One reason was that the murder and crime scene was horrific. The jury could not get past the fact that after their parents had been shot multiple times with a shotgun by them, and they were either dead or dying, the boys went out to their car to get more ammo, reloaded the weapon, and shot them more. And more recently, in season 3, we featured the story of 24-year-old Canadian Jennifer Pan, who was seeking both freedom from her parents' oppressive rules as well as financial gain. According to Dr. Kathleen Heide, who specializes in juvenile violence and adolescent parasite offenders, most of them are male adults and over the age of 18 years at the time of the murder. However, 1 in 5 parasites are carried out by offenders under the age of 18. Belinda was 19 when she had her father killed. Not surprisingly, the cases that garner the greatest attention are those carried out by children or adolescents, those carried out by females, or where there are multiple victims. According to Dr. Heide, there are key differences between adolescents who commit parricide and adults who do it. Adolescents have a higher risk of committing parricide when their home situation is problematic and they have nowhere to go. They cannot simply leave. They have nowhere to live, no money, and no finalized education to fall on to get a job and provide for themselves. Heide argues that the adolescent killer is still developing, has less life experience, does not understand their own emotions compared to adults, and are not yet able to deal with difficult conditions, such as an abusive parent. Adolescents are not going to think through their actions, their options, or really understand what avenues are available to them. They cannot weigh decisions in the same way that adults can. Adults should be, and usually are, more balanced and more developed both emotionally and cognitively. Adults can leave the home environment, set themselves up elsewhere, and if need be, cut off all contact with their parents. So why didn't Belinda do that? Just leave? Well, one reason I can think of is that as a victim of severe ongoing abuse herself, her ability to reason things out and come to a logical conclusion were stunted due to her long-standing PTSD. Additionally, remember, she had a child when she was 16, had already dropped out of school, and had no way to support herself and her daughter. She was completely dependent financially on her father, Jack. For child abuse victims, simple day-to-day survival is at the forefront of their decisions and behaviors. Just getting through one more day without abuse is their most important, if not their only, goal. Holding down a job, having a social life outside the home and being happy and productive is pretty much impossible for them. When adults do kill their parents, there are often selfish motives behind the act, such as financial gain. And that very well may be true of Belinda. However, in most other cases, psychopathology or severe mental illness may be involved. Dr. Heide has a typology of parricide offenders, which she originally developed in 1992, published in her book, Why Kids Kill Parents, Child Abuse and Adolescent Homicide. I read her book years ago, but her findings are timeless. Most common is the severely abused parricide offender. Heide says this is the most common type of adolescent offender, where there is generally long-standing abuse in the home. These offenders feel they are in danger. They are being threatened and they cannot see a way out. And they kill, quote, in response to terror or in desperation. Often, they have tried to get help in the past, maybe by telling another family member who does not live inside the home. But they have not been believed, or no intervention has taken place to improve their environment. They kill because they can no longer deal with their situation. Psychological abuse can be present alongside physical, sexual, or verbal abuse, either directed at them or someone else within the home which they witness, which was the case in the Van Creveld home. Second is the severely mentally ill parasite offender. Adult offenders are often diagnosed as severely mentally ill, and in adolescent offenders, findings often indicate they were gravely mentally disturbed at the time of the murder, and the killing is directly related to the child's mental illness. If the child is diagnosed with schizophrenia, a thought disorder, offenders may have auditory hallucinations. That means they're hearing voices. The voices, by the way, are rarely nice, and they are frequently perceived as God telling them to kill their parents. This type of offender, mentally ill, is usually on medication to control their delusions and their hallucinations. If they go off their meds, which happens a lot, the murder of a custodial parent can take place. Their parental caregiver becomes the enemy in their disordered mind, and as such, they must die. I discuss just such a case in my book, Special Agent, My Life on the Front Lines as a Woman in the FBI, about a severely schizophrenic man who was in and out of Northwestern's maximum security unit where I worked. He was huge, about 6'3" and 230 pounds. He was paranoid and thought people who wore glasses were aliens. Can you imagine standing at a bus stop and some guy the size of an NFL linebacker approaches you and rips off your glasses? That's what he did. He lived with his father, a very sweet elderly man who seemed to be resigned to his son's affliction, yet devoted to his care. He was stabbed to death by his son. On rare occasion, some cases fit into this category where there is no mental illness present. However, the offender became entirely overwhelmed by their circumstances at the time of the murder. These circumstances are usually directly related to their parent or parents. For example, they may be caring for an elderly parent with dementia or a physical disability which they find very difficult to manage. In these cases, it is most often concluded that the offender was in a state of extreme mental or emotional unbalance at the time of the murder, meaning they were at the end of their emotional rope, and then they snapped. Lastly is the dangerously antisocial offender. This type can be found in both adolescent and adult offenders. They kill for primarily selfish reasons. The parents might be, in their eyes, in the way, stopping them from doing what they want to do. It could be to get a hold of their parents' money or simply to have more freedom. These offenders usually have a long history of antisocial and criminal behavior. They may lack emotion or empathy for others, classic psychopathic traits. These offenders know what they are doing, and they are trying to gain something for themselves. Lizzie Borden, Jennifer Pan, Lyle, and Eric Menendez fit this profile. Belinda Van Creveld does not. I think she was motivated to kill her father out of revenge and punishment. A paper published in Current Psychiatry by Dr. Sarah West and Dr. Mendel Feldscher, provides common characteristics found in adult offenders. The majority of parasite offenders are male, and sons generally kill their fathers rather than their mothers. Additionally, they found that offenders are most often teenage boys with no history of psychosis. They found the killer's actions to be spontaneous and can be motivated by long-term abuse by the parents. Furthermore, juvenile offenders often feel relief after the murder rather than remorse. And that, dear listeners, describes Belinda Van Krevel to a T. She is unabashedly happy that her father is dead. She told me so herself. But don't take my word for it. See for yourself. Check out my 2010 interview of Belinda shortly after she was released from her first 6-year stint in prison for her role in Jack's murder. You can look for it in season 1 of Facing Evil with Candace DeLong. Of all the murderers I've interviewed, Belinda Van Krevel was the most interesting. And coming from me, that's quite a statement. Despite her severe, long-standing, and pervasive PTSD, Belinda Van Krevel never acted like a victim. Just like in the trial, while her brother was crying underneath the table and Belinda was seething, she focused her anger and rage into action. Unfortunately, it was a deadly action, but she never apologized for it. When I asked quite clearly if she regretted killing her father, she looked me right in the eye and answered, quote, "I'm not sorry he's dead. Why should I be? He deserved it."
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations. And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In 2002, after the main witness for the prosecution refused to testify, the prosecutor offered her a plea deal. Belinda was found guilty of solicitation of murder and sentenced to 6 years at a women's prison. After she was released in June 2007, the now 27-year-old told the waiting press, "I just want to get on with my life." But it was more of starting over than getting on. Belinda had lost her father, her brother, and her child. After her conviction, the state granted Tia's paternal grandparents full custody of their granddaughter until she was 18. Upon Belinda's release from prison, they obtained a court order to prohibit her from seeing or contacting Tia. The grandparents told the press that they were terrified of Belinda. Belinda moved on and eventually started new relationships. She had a baby boy with a man that eventually became her fiancé, and her life seemed to be going well. But in 2013, Belinda was arrested for stabbing her fiancé, a carpet salesman, in the neck. She claimed not to remember attacking him because of the bourbon and Valium she had swallowed while they were watching a rugby game. Her fiancé did not want to call the police and get Belinda in trouble. Instead, he called his father, telling him to, quote, "Come and get me quick, Dad. She has gone crazy. She thinks I'm Jack, and she has stabbed me." When police showed up at the hospital, the fiancé continued to protect her and claimed that three men had mugged him on the street. The police did not buy it and, still suspicious, searched the couple's apartment. After they found a knife and bloodstains in the living room, they arrested Belinda. She was convicted and sentenced to 3 years on one count of reckless wounding. Unlike her first incarceration, this time, Belinda participated in psychological counseling. Belinda was released in 2015 at age 35. Upon her release, she was interviewed by 60 Minutes Australia. While cameras rolled, the reporters showed Belinda one of her brother's prized possessions that the police had confiscated during a search of his bedroom, a copy of Harold Schechter's The A to Z Encyclopedia of Serial Killers. Inside the front cover, Valera had written, "The first is always your best." And then on the title page, "Who will be my number three?" A long list of names followed. Some were not surprising, like his father, Jack Van Creville. But in the middle of the list was a name that stunned Belinda, her own. The revelation shook Belinda, and it took her a minute to recover. When the interviewer then asked Belinda whether she was scared of her brother, Belinda stared back defiantly at the reporter and said, "Why would he scare me?" She insisted, "I know my brother, and I know he's a good person." Belinda's loyalty to her brother has never wavered. In the years after her second release from prison, Belinda had several more run-ins with the law. Among some of the charges were the theft of an elderly woman's purse, for which she was given a 15-month jail sentence, a physical altercation with her female roommate over marijuana, and assault and occasioning bodily harm on an elderly man. In 2023, Belinda was living with her new partner, a 56-year-old man she met in her apartment complex. On March 4th, the two got into an argument after leaving a kebab shop. She accused him of cheating on her and hit him in the face with a bottle, giving him a black eye. When they returned to their apartment, Belinda grabbed a kitchen knife and stabbed him in the back of his left shoulder. He passed out, and after he woke up, tried to call for help. But Belinda took the phone away and shouted, quote, "You can't get anyone better than me." She then stabbed him a second time. Her boyfriend was able to call emergency services before Belinda took his phone away again. Emergency medics arrived and took him to the hospital. He arrived in serious condition and underwent immediate surgery. Of course, Belinda was arrested and detained, and in November, the now 43-year-old Belinda pleaded guilty to stabbing her partner. During sentencing, the judge noted Belinda's traumatic childhood and ongoing PTSD. He remarked that her first incarceration had traumatized her even more, saying that she did not come out of prison the first time a better person than when she went in. Belinda was sentenced to 6 years with a non-parole period of 4 years. I hope they prove to be trauma and drama free. If you like Killer Psyche, you can unlock exclusive episodes found nowhere else on Wondery Plus and access new episodes early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. And before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery and Treefort Media, this is Killer Psyche. I'm your host, Candace DeLong. This episode was written and produced by Lisa Ammerman and Julie Burke. Ann Liu is our producer, and Jada Williams is our associate producer. Story research and additional writing by Ann Liu, Will Christensen, and Jada Williams. Mix and sound design by Matt Dyson, Abigail Sullivan, and Aaron Bauman. Head of audio, Tom Monahan, with audio assistance from Masuzu Enaga. For Wondery, Yasmin Wart is our producer, and Lizzie Bassett is our senior producer. Mariah Gossett is our coordinating producer, and Callum Plews is our senior managing producer. The executive in charge of production for Treefort is Oscar Guido, and the co-executive producer is Julie Burke. Lastly, our executive producers are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman for Treefort, and Marshall Louie and Aaron O'Flaherty for Wondery. And last, but not least, myself, Candace DeLong. The series is produced by Wondery and Treefort Media.
Hey, podcast listeners, have you heard you can listen to your favorite podcasts ad-free? That's good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/ad-free podcasts. That's amazon.com/ad-free podcasts to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.